You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
There, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. By the way, if you love the show, please take a moment to give it a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. I really appreciate your support. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. And if you would like to join me today, the number in the studio, which I guess the studio is now in my house, the number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind and what is eating at you, because the real problem with binging, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is, again, what is eating at you. It is not what you're eating that is the problem. It is why. So I welcome your calls and let me know how you're doing, what I can help you with, what's bothering you, what's on your mind, what's going on with food, what's going on with you. Let's talk about all of it. And by the way, feel free to call anytime. Do not worry about interrupting me as I am talking, because I can always get back to this, and I would love to talk with you. So I have a bunch of questions that I want to continue answering. Lots and lots of questions people have been sending me that I've been collecting, and I'm finally getting to them. So here is a question. This person writes, I saw a TikTok, and it was this girl that did good, quote unquote, good all day, and then ate the whole pantry at night. That's me too. Why does it happen, and how can I stop? This is so common. Nighttime eating is such a thing. It is so common. Why is that? Well, there are two reasons. One of them is physiological, and one of them is psychological. So physiologically, one reason that people binge is because they don't eat enough during the day. And if you don't eat enough, you get starving, you get ravenous, and then by the time you start eating, you don't register when you're full, and you end up, you know, binging, but binging because you're so hungry. So that is one reason why people binge at night. Now, for the reason that I think is actually more predominant, the psychological reason. So during the day, we are busy. We're doing things. Our minds are occupied. We're working. We're taking care of kids or other people. We're doing stuff. We're not thinking so much about our lives. We're not feeling. What happens at night is you're no longer busy. So instead of being in a state of doing, you become in a state of being. And being is when those thoughts can creep in, those feelings can creep in. You can start thinking about things that are bothering you, that are upsetting you, things that maybe make you feel bad or powerless or afraid or anxious or whatever. And then if you don't have the strategies to deal with the feelings that are coming up, you're going to use food to cope, because eating does a lot for you. That's why I call it a frenemy. Hi there. I'm randomly saying hi to people on Instagram. Hi. Hi, everyone on Instagram. I'm glad you're here. So it is a friend in that it does something for you. It helps you in some way. It distracts you. It numbs you. It comforts you. It symbolically expresses what's going on. If you're empty and lonely, it fills the void. If you're angry, crunching is like a way of expressing anger. There are just so many ways. There are a plethora of ways in which food can access and express what's going on inside. So it is a friend. It does something for you, and it also distracts you. If you're thinking about what you're eating, if you're thinking about not eating something, if you're focusing on what you're eating, if you're counting calories and carbs and fat grams and macros and who knows what, maybe you're not thinking about something else. It does something for you. Then then it also hurts you, of course. Yes, it's like living a constant state of, yeah, exactly. Okay, so what do you do about the cycle? So why is binge eating at night such a thing? Because that's when you're not distracted by other things and your thoughts, your feelings are more available to you. And that's when a part of you goes, uh-oh, no thank you. I can't deal. This is too uncomfortable. What's in the pantry? What's in the fridge? Where's the nearest drive-thru? What can I order? Postmates, anyone? Right? It's a way of distracting from something uncomfortable. So what to do? You've got to figure out what you are distracting from. Identifying it is the first step. If you weren't thinking about food, what would be on your mind? If you weren't eating, if you weren't binging, what would be on your mind? If you weren't focused on food, weight, body image, all of that stuff, what's left? What would be bothering you? That's the thing that actually needs your attention. And that's the first step, right? First, it's okay, let's figure out what's going on. What's actually eating at you instead of focusing on what you're eating? Then a lot of people tell me, oh, I don't want to sit in my feelings. That's just horrible. You know what? I agree. Sitting in your feelings is to quote the person on Instagram, I can't read you, Miss Hilly, is sucky. It is Suckville. It is Suckville. So I am not advocating that you sit in your feelings. Sitting in your feelings is Suckville. It is awful. It is painful. It is difficult. Yucky. Who wants it? So first of all, you've got to express what you're feeling. Miss Hilly. Yes. Constant expectations that I have felt like I can't meet, the pressure of that. Yeah, it's too much. And then going to food to cope, to feel better, to distract. So instead of sitting in your feelings, which of course is ugh, yuck. First, you got to express those feelings. So let's just take an emotion. Hillary, since you're here, what is one feeling that you find it hard to be with? What is the feeling of being under pressure and having expectations? All feelings come down to mad, sad, glad, or afraid. So feeling expectations of other people. She feels pressured. So Hillary, what you want to do is express that. What is the feeling of that? Is it anxiety? So you want to express anxiety. I feel anxious because it feels like I'm not probably afraid, right? Afraid is a form of anxiety. So you want to afraid of disappointment. So express what it's like. It's scary to feel like I'm going to disappoint people. It's upsetting to think I'm not going to live up to expectations. It's painful to feel like I'm not good enough. But you have to put into words what the feeling is. So first you express it, you get it out, and you get it out on a page in a journal. You get it out talking to a friend. You say it out loud. You might take those off. Get out rather than try to stuff them down. Want to get them out. Then after you express them, that's when you want to comfort yourself with words. So of course, then you tell yourself, of course I feel afraid of disappointing others. Of course I don't feel good enough. I have all this pressure on myself. It's a terrible way to feel. Of course I feel this way. It's really painful and anxiety producing and awful to feel as if I am totally never living up to expectations and nothing I ever do is good enough. How else could I feel? Right? That's validate and acknowledge yourself. Then you reassure yourself. But you know what? I am going to set my own standards instead of trying to live up to the expectations of others. I'm going to review my own expectations of myself. I'm going to define what the heck is good enough anyway. What is good enough? People are always saying, I'm not good enough. What is good enough? Guess who decides what's good enough? Carly Gash, I see you. Hold on. Sorry, Carly Gash, bear with me. I'll be right there. What is good enough? We have to decide what is good enough. So part of the reassurance is, hey, I'm going to decide what is good enough. I am going to decide what that is. And that is how I'm going to feel good about myself. That's what you do instead of turning to food, to stuff down, distract, whatever. Carly Gash, so sorry I get so carried away talking. I don't see that Sam has put your name on the queue. So welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dr. Nina. Thank you very much. I just wanted to check if we have this technical connection or not. So that's why I kind of said hi. Hard. I'm still recovering from the flu, I guess. And it's very hard to manage emotions when I have physical pain or any sorts of body, you know, when my body is uncomfortable or I'm in pain. It immediately stirs up the emotional pain as well, and it's just double hard to handle it. So I'm trying to understand what's going on, and I am like refusing to work. This is the third day. It's again the same story. My customers are calling me, but I'm not working. I'm kind of don't believe in myself and sit there, although like the work is out there. I just need to get up and work.
Why do you not believe? So you're sabotaging yourself. And since you've called so often, we know that there seems to be a pattern of things go well and you take away, not returning calls, binging, whatever. There's some fear that success is going to lead to something bad. And so therefore you take the success away from yourself. Could that be going on?
That could be, but also there is like a, there is a new thought which bothers me. I'm very resentful and angry on the fact that I have to work now. I started working when I was 8, and I guess I just am very tired of just working all the time. And I guess I'm just very resentful that I'm lonely. I don't have a family. I don't have kids. And I still have to work, you know. As if I had family, I had a reason to can't I get up and do it for myself.
Well, I think your mind is tricking you into finding ways of sabotaging yourself, because there's work and there's work. So you've talked about being a kid in Kazakhstan and, you know, selling things on the street early on, selling chocolates, I think you said. But you've shared recently that you started your own company. So it's interesting that you would make an equivalency between working in the past and working now when you started your own company, when it is your own thing, when it can be, you know, it's something that you're the boss, you're creating, it's for you, and yet your mind is making it almost like you're working for someone else.
Well, I opened the company, but I work for the big company. I'm kind of independent agent for them. So in a sense, I do have restrictions from them as well as help.
Well, Carly Gash, I can understand if you've been working since you were a small child, that it would be very hard to continue to get up and have to work and be have to answer to other people and all of that. I can understand you would feel resentful and you would feel everything that you're feeling. And what are your choices? Unfortunately, it is a necessity of life, but work is not just, you know, but you have a choice. You could stop working. You could stop working. You can change your living situation. I don't think this is really about working. I think that you are, you, because there's some internal prohibition against abundance.
Yeah. You might be right, Dr. Nina. I'm also angry, like, because they shut down internet in Kazakhstan for the past 5 days in the beginning of January. And I had to call my mom just directly. And I got a bill. I covered the bill. I covered something about $700. I was just so angry, honestly, that, you know, this kind of bills are, like, insane. And they shut down the internet in my country, and the only way I could talk to my mom is because of this expensive way.
Okay, so rather than attack yourself and not want to work and feel, maybe you feel depressed or whatever it is, I think you need to express that anger. You need to express that resentment. You need to express whatever it is that is going on so that you don't turn against yourself by not working, alienating customers, and, you know, shooting yourself in the foot.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard. I don't know. You are right. What are my choices? I mean, we have to work. I have to work. I have to get up and do things. It might be that the still flu thing, because, you know, it's one thing when you have a flu and somebody's just taking care of you. But I mean, I don't mind. I got used to being sick alone my whole life. I hope when I get better, like physically, I will have more like strength to move and do stuff. But like, also, I guess I just acutely am feeling loneliness. I never let myself my whole life feel loneliness. I never tapped into this feeling. I would always avoid it. You know, I would say, no. I would lie to myself. I would say, no, I'm not lonely, since I was a kid. Because I think I was 6 years old when, for the first time in life, I experienced and felt this, like, acute loneliness that I'm alone by myself in the world, and I literally have nobody. Like, family doesn't care about me, and, like, I don't have, like, real friends. And I remember I felt that, and it was just such a very, very lonely feeling. So I guess I got scared and ran away from it my whole life. So I used to avoid it, pretend that I have life, create some, drag some people into my life.
Carly, gosh, I actually just thought of something. You said earlier, if you wouldn't have to work if you were married and you had kids. Well, I mean, so you seem to make a little bit of a split. You're either working and making money, or you're not working and being married with kids, as if it's an either or. Most people I know work. By the way, no job is as hard as motherhood. I just want to say working, that's a 24/7 job for life. That is a hard job. So, but maybe you're making this idea, the split between you're either working in your own business and you're alone, or you're married with kids and not working, so that it feels when you're working like you're being deprived of something. So watch the splits, the black and white feeling, and deal with the what is the loneliness? How can you create more fulfilled relationships and obstacles to that? Maybe there's a hope and a fear of the same thing.
Okay, thank you. I will think about it because it's good that I'm letting myself feel loneliness and feel lonely. I think it's a progress for me instead of running away from it.
Yes, but now express, like what I was saying earlier was, it's not enough to just identify what you feel. Then you've got to express it. I feel lonely. This is what it feels like to be lonely. I feel lonely because of this. I feel lonely because of that. This is how it feels. It feels like there's a total void the size of a universe within me. It feels like there's a vast nothingness that's yearning to be filled. Like, however you put it, you want to express what that loneliness feels like. The touch. And then maybe the fear of it. Maybe you want to express the fear, but I'm also afraid. I'm totally scared that if I get close to someone, I'll get, they'll treat me badly, or things will change, or whatever it is, right? And then you comfort yourself. So it's not just enough to identify it. You also have to express it. And then, yeah, of course I feel this way. How could I not? And reassure yourself. I'm taking steps to change the way I feel. I'm taking steps to change what I'm doing. And it's not always going to feel this way.
So vary it.
Vary it. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Just talking to you, Dr. Nina, made things a little bit easier. I guess I'm just missing real human action, like connect things. It's like, I'm really missing people. I'm really missing being among people. And just having this flu, I've literally isolated myself from everyone because I don't want, like, to pass it to someone. And during the pandemic, I never let myself feel isolated and saying that those measures are necessary for our health and safety. So, you know, and I'm a kid who, I know what survival is. So I've done a lot of restrictions in my life. I've taken like responsibility since I was a kid, so I know what to do. But I guess I never let myself feel that. It still sucks, you know, being into pandemic, and when I have a flu, isolating myself from people, not being able to give a hug to even people I know. So it would get very lonely because I like people and talking to them.
Difficult, absolutely. Just don't sabotage yourself as a way of expressing some feeling within. Like, take care of yourself while you're having these feelings. Okay, take care of yourself in every way. I hope you feel better from, I hope you had the flu and not COVID. But whatever it is that's going on, I hope you're feeling better. So
thank
you're going to
you,
take your own
Nina.
Side,
I
right,
will...
Gash?
Thank you, Dr. Nina. I will take care of myself.
Okay. That sounds like a very good idea. Let me know how it goes.
I will. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank
so much.
You. Bye for now.
Okay.
You know, so often we focus on another thing. She hates working or resents working or whatever it is, so that she doesn't feel that the ache and the pain of loneliness and 2 years of a pandemic and not being able to connect and not being able to be with people. It's easier to do something, like not working or not wanting to work is something you're doing, than to feel like you're on the passive end of something going on in the world over which you have no control. Hillary said, she said, my husband who played baseball doesn't think I could coach my son's baseball team. They need more coaches. He said it would be like him teaching dance. But she says, I'm not going to let it discourage me because it's now a challenge. Yes, great attitude. And guess what? Hillary, you get to be upset at your husband. Like, how dare he, that, you know, presume that you can't teach your son's baseball team and that make it analogous to him teaching dance. Of course you're upset. Of course that's upsetting. You know, that doesn't feel good at all. And reassuring yourself, now it's a challenge. Now you can show him because you know that you can do it, and you get to decide if you're going to do it or not, and you can go for it. And that way you can encourage yourself, but just make sure that you allow yourself to express for yourself how it felt to have that comment. Because what often people do is they go right to the kind of, oh, look on the bright side, or they try to say, oh, well, maybe he didn't really mean, or, but maybe, like they try to spin it. Everything that hurt your feelings or upset you isn't really upsetting, and you shouldn't feel that way. Instead of going, hell yeah, you're upset. Totally you feel that way. How could you not feel that way? Of course you do. Whether it's a super intense or a little bit, you feel what you feel. So honor it and then go to the reassurance. When you overlook the validating and acknowledge and go right to reassurance, or positive thinking often, all it does is nullify and dismiss what you're actually feeling. And what you are feeling needs your attention, period. Needs your attention, not your dismissive, not your condemnation. Okay, so just to sum up, it is because something is bothering you. It is easier to turn to food than to look at what is bothering you. You've got to identify what it is that you don't want to, what is it that you know that you don't want to know? Essentially, it's that. What is it you don't want to know that you somewhere know? Sometimes we know, we usually know, but we don't want to know. So we push it down, we shove it aside, we focus on other things. Guess who wants to coach now? Yes, absolutely, exactly. If you don't express it, Hillary's right, then you're going to hold a grudge. Then things get really contentious. You got to get it out. And that may or may not be to say something to the person who's upsetting you. Hillary, you know, your husband, it may or may not be helpful to say, hey, look, it really bothers me that you don't think that I can coach the game. It really upsets me. It makes me feel that you like that might be a waste of breath, but you have to say it to someone and at least to yourself. So identifying what it is that you don't want to know, expressing that, and then comforting yourself with very. How do you comfort yourself? You validate, you acknowledge, and you reassure yourself. And when you can do that, guess what? You will be able to get through the night without feeling like drawn to the kitchen, like the millennial falcon drawn to the Death Star, right? That's how it feels like. Resistance is futile. You don't have to resist when you're directly attending to what it is that is eating at you. Okay. About bringing up body image, specifically your daughter. Oh, how do you talk to family members without bringing up body image, specifically your daughters? I'm confused. I'm not sure I understand what, I'm just going to answer what I think the question is. So I have two daughters, and since they were babies, all people talk about is how pretty they are. So it's really interesting. Like little boys, oh, you did such a good job catching that ball, or oh, you're such a little man. Oh, you're such a and then girls like, you're so pretty. She's so pretty. Oh, the gender stereotyping of girls and boys starts so early. And so what I started doing very early on is telling them, each of them, hey, you know what? It is not, that's fantastic, wonderful, love it. However, it is simply an accident of birth. It doesn't make you a better person. It's lovely to be pretty. So what? In other words, what makes you like someone? Do you look at someone and say, that person is good looking, I want to be their friend? Or do you want to be someone's friend because of who they are, how they are, how they treat other people, what they say, what they talk about? Do you have fun together? So very, very early on, I had to have these conversations to just balance the books on these comments that were always being made, that teaches little girls who then become bigger girls and adult women who really overly value themselves by how they look. I am all in favor of looking good. Are you kidding me? It's great to look good. If I didn't think that, I would be worried. So I should find to look good, but just don't make that the main aspect of who you are. I cannot tell you how many people say, well, I will love myself when, talk about conditional love, I will love myself when I get to that weight. But I can't love myself until I get to some magical number on the scale. What the actual? Look, you have to love yourself that will help you actually lose weight. When you love yourself and when you take yourself seriously, when you listen to yourself, when you respond to yourself, when you care about yourself, when you're there for yourself, when you're a friend to yourself, when you're supportive and loving, that's when you make yourself feel better and you don't turn to food. Otherwise, you're putting conditionality of your lovability on whatever number there is on the scale. No. No, this is a lie perpetrated on us and perpetuated by the $60 billion diet industry. We are not going to be better people at a certain weight. We are not going to feel better about ourselves at a certain weight. It's okay to want to lose weight. I get a lot of flack for that. Apparently, you're not supposed to say that it's okay to lose weight. Body positivity and all that. Look, for people who are feeling good about their bodies at whatever size they are, good for you. That's fantastic. For someone else who wants to lower their weight and who doesn't feel good about their body, you can love yourself while changing your body. You don't have to love yourself only when your body changes. So that's a question. How do you talk to your family members without bringing up body image? You just don't bring up body image. You just don't make it a factor. One of my daughters is tall and thin and the other one is shorter and kind of more solid, like, you know, she's a gymnast, a cheerleader and all of that. They have totally different body types. I have never once, and I'm so proud of this, said anything about either of them. You just don't say anything because you know what? It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. So there are other things to think about other than what you look like. Now, how do you talk to family members if they have a problem with their body image? Your girl problem, my girl. I talk to them about what it means. My younger daughter, who's like I said, she's sort of more like a solid gymnast, kind of muscular girl. She started feeling bad when she was 9 and noticing that maybe she had a little bit of a different body than all her like super skinny girlfriends. And so we just talked about it. I said, what does it mean that you have you're more muscular and solid than some of your friends? What does it mean to you? Why do you feel bad about it? Like you just talk and ask questions. And I never said, oh, you shouldn't feel that way. What I said was, why do you feel that way? Why? What is it that makes you think that there's something wrong with the way that you feel about your body? This is the same kid who, when she was 2 years old, would go around feeling her tummy, which was sticking out, because when you're 2, your tummy sticks out. She's like, I love my big tummy. I love my big tummy. Oh, what happened to that little child who loved her big tummy? You know, she got socialized out of it. So if you can just talk to your family members, what does it mean to them? How do they feel? And really listen and honor what they say without dismissing it, without saying anything like, you look great, don't be silly, you're fine. Just listen to how they feel. Don't make it about their bodies, make it about how they feel about their bodies. And ask questions. Like, one thing that I say a lot is, would you like your friends more if they lost weight? Would you just say like, wow, you know what? My friend was great, but now that she's lost weight, she's even greater. I love her so much more. And everyone's like, of course not. How ridiculous. Well, then why do you think that yourself with your body? I was just talking to someone about this book called The Body Project. And in The Body Project, how am I doing on time? Okay. In the Body Project, the author looked at the diaries of girls and young women from the 1800s to, I think, the 60s or 70s, or maybe later. I don't remember exactly. But before World War II, a lot of times girls would write in their diaries and they'd say, I hope that people think that I'm a good moral person. I hope that so-and-so finds me to be a good person. I hope so-and-so thinks that I'm, you know, kind, loving, good. It was all about morality and the kind of person that they were. That's what they were focused on, and that's what they were writing about. Somewhere after World War II, they started writing about, I hope I look good. You know, oh, I hope that so-and-so thinks I'm pretty, or I hope this boy thinks that I'm, you know, loves my hair or attractive. And then as time went on, as the decades went on, it became, I want to get skinnier. I want to be thinner. When I get thin, then I will fill in the blank. When, then, trap. When I'm thin, or then I will have this life. And that's the great illusion that we all have to actively challenge, the illusion that your life will change and you will change as a person when you lose weight. That it, by losing weight, you change the way other people think about you and the way that you think about yourself. It's an illusion that losing weight will change your life. Losing weight will change the number on the scale. Losing weight will change the number of your genes. Losing weight will not make you feel good about yourself for good. Because what happens? You lose weight. This has happened so many times. People lose weight on, like, say they get weight loss surgery. Well, they don't deal with why they're eating. They just deal with food through the weight loss surgery. The regain, by the way, is something like, it's like 98%. It's some crazy, don't quote me on that. That might not be a real figure, but it's somewhere up there like that. The regain for weight loss surgery is so high because people don't look at why they're eating. And then once they have the weight loss surgery, they lose a ton of weight, but then they start gaining it back, or they do other things because they can't cope with what's going on inside. And the reality is we have to learn to accept ourselves, to accept our emotions, to accept our internal world, and to be kind and loving to ourselves. That is the way out of binge eating, and it is the way into self-acceptance and self-esteem. It really has to do with your relationship with yourself. And by the way, that reminds me of someone once said to me, she said, I don't understand why I don't feel better about myself. I am the queen of self-care. So I asked her, well, okay, your worship, you're the queen of self-care. What are you doing? She's like, well, I get my hair blown out every week. I get my nails done. I get facials. I get massages. I get my eyebrows done. I get everything done. And yet I don't feel better about myself. What's up? So I told her, that is not self-care. That is grooming. That is grooming. You're taking care of your physical self. That is not self-care. Self-care is showing up for yourself, being your own best friend, not your worst critic, supporting yourself, responding to yourself, taking what you feel seriously, lifting yourself up instead of tearing yourself down. That's self-care. And when you do that, you don't need food as a distraction or for comfort or for celebration or for any of the various reasons that we use it when we don't know how to be with ourselves. Okay, I think I have time for one more question. And by the way, if anyone in Instagram wants to drop a comment or a question like Hillary did, please feel free. Otherwise, I will choose another one of these. I'm in the process of learning to become my own best friend. I love that. What is your biggest challenge in becoming your own best friend? All right, while I'm waiting for that response, I will look at and try to find another. Affirmations for a healthy body image. Well, this one is a tricky one. Affirmations can be tricky because you can't talk yourself into feeling differently about yourself by simply affirming something that's opposite of what you actually believe. undoing the patterns from your childhood. Yes, that's really good. We learn to relate to ourselves in a way that is critical or judgmental or painful, or to ignore ourselves or to judge ourselves. We learn that. And the good part about that is that what we learn, we can unlearn, and we can learn a whole new way. So she's saying she's reprogramming herself and finding security from within. Exactly. Someone asked me the other day, why do we treat ourselves one way and we treat other people a different way? And I find this so common, right? We treat ourselves in this really vicious, really cruel, really mean way that we end up just eating to get away from our own mean, critical, harsh, horrible voice. Because you can't make yourself feel bad by telling yourself how awful you are and then simultaneously tell yourself that you're okay and you're good. Like, those two things don't go together. You can't tear yourself down as you're raising yourself up. Right? So we often tear ourselves down, feel terrible, and go to food to escape. Where did you learn to doubt yourself? So why do we treat ourselves the one way and other people another way? Well, often we treat ourselves as we were treated, and we treat other people as we would have wished to be treated. So I see this a lot. People who perhaps had very, like, say, parents, or it doesn't have to be parents, but grandparents or someone in their lives, some authority figure who was judgmental, who was critical, who was harsh, or who ignored them. And because of that, they internalize that judgment. You consciously hate it and you unconsciously internalize it and identify with the way that you were being treated. So then you treat yourself as you were treated, but you treat other people as you would have liked to be treated. And it's so important to look at, you know, where did you learn this? Because when you see where you learned it, then you can undo it. Well, looking at where the past is alive in the present is so important. People ask me, as a psychoanalyst, one of the questions I get is, oh my God, is it always about your mother? No, it's not. Although the oldest psychoanalytic joke in the book is, if it's not one thing, it's your mother. Ba-dum-bum. Okay. This is why I don't do stand-up. Okay. The other question they ask me is it always about the past? The past is past. Why do you always talk about the past? Or people say, I talked about the past in therapy for 10 years and I'm no better. Well, of course not, because talking about the past isn't enough. You got to look at how the past is alive in the present. How is the past haunting your present? For example, here's an example. Someone who grew up with a very distant, cold parent. And this, like, she couldn't get this parent's attention no matter what. The parent was always distant. I think the parent was probably depressed. But anyway, she was in such pain growing up from this parent. Food represents people. She started to turn to food instead of to her mother. It was her mother, single mother. And then she grows up and she starts dating. And what kind of guys do you think she dates? Guys who are just like her mother. Why? Why is that? Because we try to get from new relationships what we got, in the hopes that if we date this person who was like the original person, it'll heal the original relationship. So it's almost like, hey, I can undo the past by finding this familiar person in the present and converting them to be loving and kind. It never works, because judgmental, critical, hostile, indifferent people are always that. They don't suddenly become warm and loving and fuzzy. So recognizing how you came to... why is your past in the present? How is your past in the present? That's the question. what's being replicated, what's being repeated. It's not just about, oh, in the past I had this judgmental parent and let me talk about that for 5 years. No, that doesn't help. It's to be able to be like, yeah, let me look at, I had this judgmental parent for and maybe I talk about it for a little bit, but I got to look at how that dynamic is with me now. How is it with me romantically? What happens at work? There's a whole thing with work, which I'll get to another time. I'm making a note. Work. So essentially what I'm saying is you got to be a detective. You got to look at how is your past haunting your present. That has everything to do with how you feel, and how you feel and how you respond to yourself has everything to do with what is going on with food. That's how it all works. You are very welcome. I'm really happy to help in any way. There is so much misinformation out there. People think that they are, for example, triggered by food. You are not triggered by food. You are triggered by some situation, and food is a solution to the problem. Food is not the problem. The problem is that the true trigger is often hidden from us. We get so fast at coping that we don't even know we're triggered. And so we have to work backwards and look at, okay, well, what was the trigger? What was going on? What was happening that right beforehand that made you go to food? Because it's not that you are addicted to food. You are using food to distract, comfort, resolve something that you may or may not be aware of. That's what makes it complicated, but complicated doesn't mean impossible. And that's why I'm here, to help you find the hidden reasons why you are doing whatever it is that you are doing with food. I'm here to tell you, if you are doing something you don't want to do, or you're not doing something you want to do, there is a reason. There is a reason. And if you are curious, not critical, if you are curious about what that reason is, that's why I say I'm a detective of the mind, looking at, well, what are the clues? Why are you doing whatever it is that you're doing with food? Then once you know the why, you can form a plan to change how you respond, how you feel. And then things with food just change automatically. It really does work. It really does. So I cannot believe it. That is my show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. I'm here live on LA Talk Radio and on Instagram every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. If you miss the show, you can always watch it later on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get podcasts. And you can feel free to write me any questions. I will answer them on air. You can call me also. If you want to know more about the hidden reasons that you are turning to food, head on over to my website, Dr. Nina Inc., drninainc.com, and you can download my free food mood formula guidebook. It's going to help you so much. So have a wonderful week. Stay curious, not critical, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.